restrooms. The hall was painted terracotta and was decorated with maracas, straw hats, and wooden dolls. It was hotter back here, and I wiped my forehead. The plan now was to get this over with as quickly as possible. As soon as I was back at the table, I'd formulate an excuse about needing to leave and haul V out, with or without her consent. After peeking below the three stalls in the ladies' room and confirming I was alone, I locked the main door and dumped the contents of the 7-Eleven sacks onto the counter. One platinum blonde wig, one purple push-up bra, one black tube top, one sequined miniskirt, hot pink fishnet tights, and one pair of size 8.5 shark skin stiletto heels. I stuffed the bra, the tube top, and the tights back inside the sacks. After sloughing off my jeans, I pulled on the miniskirt. I tucked my hair under the wig and applied the lipstick. I topped it off with a generous coat of high-shine lip gloss. "You can do this," I told my reflection, snapping the cap back on the gloss and blotting my lips together. "You can pull a Marcy Miller, seduce men for secrets. How hard can it be?" I kicked off my driving mocks, stuffed them into a sack along with my jeans, then pushed the sack under the counter, out of sight. "Besides," I continued, "there's nothing wrong with sacrificing a little pride for the sake of intelligence. If you want to approach this with a morbid outlook, you could even say, if you don't get answers, you could wind up dead. Because like it or not, someone out there means you harm." I dangled the sharkskin heels in my line of vision. They weren't the ugliest things I'd ever seen. In fact, they could be considered sexy. Jaws meets Coldwater, Maine. I strapped myself into them and practiced walking across the bathroom several times. 2 minutes later, I eased myself on top of a bar stool at the bar. The bartender eyed me. 16, he guessed. 17. He looked about 10 years older than me and had receding brown hair that he wore shaved close. A silver hoop hung from his right earlobe, white t-shirt and Levi's. Not bad looking. Not great, either. "I'm not an underage drinker," I called loudly above the music and surrounding conversation. "I'm waiting for a friend. I've got a great view of the doors here." I retrieved the list of questions from my handbag and covertly positioned the paper under a glass salt shaker. "What's that?" the bartender asked, wiping his hands on a towel and nodding at the list. I slid the list farther under the salt shaker. "Nothing," I said, all innocence. He raised an eyebrow. I decided to be loose with the truth. "It's a shopping list. I have to pick up some groceries for my mom on the way home." What happened to flirting? I asked myself. What happened to Marcy Miller? He gave me a scrutinizing look that I decided wasn't all negative. "After working this job for 5 years, I'm pretty good at spotting liars." "I'm not a liar," I said. Maybe I was lying a moment ago, but it was just one lie. One little lie doesn't make me a liar.
"You look like a reporter," he said.
"I work for my high school's e-zine." I wanted to shake myself. Reporters didn't instill trust in people. People were generally suspicious of reporters. "But I'm not working tonight," I amended quickly. "Strictly pleasure tonight. No business. No underlying agendas. None whatsoever." After a count of silence, I decided the best move was to plow ahead. I cleared my throat and said, "Is the Borderline a popular place of employment for high school students?"
"We get a lot of those, yeah. Hostesses and busboys and the like."
"Really?" I said, feigning surprise. "Maybe I know some of them. Try me." The bartender angled his eyes toward the ceiling and scratched the stubble on his chin. His blank stare wasn't inspiring my confidence. Not to mention that I didn't have a lot of time. Elliot could be slipping lethal drugs into V's Diet Coke. "How about Patch Cipriano?" I asked. "Does he work here?"
"Patch? Yeah, he works here. A couple of nights. And weekends."
"Was he working Sunday night?" I tried not to sound too curious, but I needed to know if it was possible for Patch to have been at the pier. He said he had a party on the coast, but maybe his plans had changed. If someone verified that he was at work Sunday evening, I could rule out his involvement in the attack on V.
"Sunday." More scratching. "The nights blur together. Try the Hostesses. One of them will remember. They all giggle and go a little screwy when he's around.
He smiled as if I might somehow sympathize with them. I said, you wouldn't happen to have access to his job application, including his home address?
That would be a no.
Just out of curiosity, I said, do you know if it's possible to get hired here if you have a felony on your record?
A felony? He gave a bark of laughter. You kidding me?
Okay, maybe not a felony, but how about a misdemeanor?
He spread his palms on the counter and leaned close. No.
His tone had shifted from humoring to insulted. That's good. That's really good to know.
I repositioned myself on the bar stool and felt the skin on my thighs peel away from the vinyl. I was sweating. If rule number one of flirting was no lists, I was fairly certain rule number two was no sweating.
I consulted my list. Do you know if Patch has ever had any restraining orders? Does he have a history of stalking? I suspected the bartender was getting a bad vibe from me, and I decided to throw all my questions out in a last-ditch effort before he sent me away from the bar, or worse, had me evicted from the restaurant for harassment and suspicious behavior. Does he have a girlfriend? I blurted.
Go ask him, he said.
I blinked. He's not working tonight. At the bartender's grin, my stomach seemed to unravel. He's not working tonight, is he? I asked, my voice inching up an octave. He's supposed to have Tuesdays off.
Usually, yeah, but he's covering for Benji. Benji went to the hospital, ruptured appendix.
You mean Patch is here? Right now? I glanced over my shoulder, brushing the wig to cover my profile while I scanned the dining area for him.
He walked back to the kitchen a couple minutes ago.
I was already disengaging myself from the bar stool. I think I left my car running, but it was great talking to you. I hurried as quickly as I could to the restrooms. Inside the ladies' room, I locked the door behind me, drew a few breaths with my back pressed to the door, then went to the sink and splashed cold water on my face. Patch was going to find out I'd spied on him. My memorable performance guaranteed that. On the surface, this was a bad thing because it was, well, humiliating. But when I thought about it, I had to face the fact that Patch was very secretive. Secretive people didn't like their lives pried into. How would he react when he learned I was holding him under a magnifying glass? And now I wondered why I'd come here at all, since deep inside, I didn't believe Patch was the guy behind the ski mask. Maybe he had dark, disturbing secrets, but running around in a ski mask wasn't one of them. I turned off the tap, and when I looked up, Patch's face was reflected in the mirror. I shrieked and swung around. He wasn't smiling, and he didn't look particularly amused. What are you doing here? I gasped.
I work here.
I mean here. Can't you read the sign on the door?
I'm starting to think you're following me. Every time I turn around, there you are.
I wanted to take V out, I explained. She's been in the hospital. I sounded defensive. I was certain that only made me look more guilty. I never dreamed I'd run into you. It's supposed to be your night off. And what are you talking about? Every time I turn around, there you are. Patch's eyes were sharp, intimidating, extracting. They calculated my every word, my every movement.
Want to explain the tacky hair?
He said. I yanked off the wig and tossed it on the counter. Want to explain where you've been? You've missed the last 2 days of school. I was almost certain Patch wouldn't reveal his whereabouts, but he said,
playing paintball. What were you doing at the bar?
Talking with the bartender. Is that a crime? Balancing one hand against the counter, I raised my foot to unbuckle a sharkskin heel. I bent over slightly, and as I did, the interrogation list fluttered out of my neckline and onto the floor. I went down on my knees for it, but Patch was faster. He held it over his head while I jumped for it. Give it back, I said.
Does Patch have a restraining order against him?
He read.
Is Patch a felon?
Give me that, I hissed furiously. Patch gave a soft laugh, and I knew he'd seen the next question.
Does Patch have a girlfriend?
Patch put the paper in his back pocket. I was sorely tempted to go after it,
despite its location. He leaned back against the counter and leveled our eyes. If you're going to dig around for information, I'd prefer that you ask me.
Those questions, I waved where he'd hidden them, were a joke. V wrote them, I added in a flash of inspiration. It's all her fault.
I know your handwriting, Nora.
Well, okay, fine, I began, hunting for a smart reply, but I took too long and lost my chance.
No restraining orders, he said. No felonies.
I tilted my chin up. Girlfriend? I told myself I didn't care how he answered. Either way was fine with me.
That's none of your business.
You tried to kiss me, I reminded him. You made it my business. The ghost of a pirate smile lurked at his mouth. I got the impression he was recalling every last detail of that near kiss, including my sigh/moan.
Ex-girlfriend, he said after a moment.
My stomach dropped as a sudden thought popped into my mind. What if the girl from Delphic and Victoria's Secret was Patch's ex? What if she saw me talking to Patch at the arcade and mistakenly assumed there was a lot more to our relationship? If she was still attracted to Patch, it made sense that she might be jealous enough to follow me around. A few puzzle pieces seemed to fall into place. And then Patch said,
"But she's not around."
What do you mean she's not around?
She's gone. She's never coming back.
You mean she's dead? I asked. Patch didn't deny it. My stomach suddenly felt heavy and twisted. I hadn't expected this. Patch had a girlfriend, and now she was dead. The door to the ladies' room rattled as someone tried to enter. I'd forgotten I'd locked it, which made me wonder how Patch got in. Either he had a key, or there was another explanation. An explanation I probably didn't want to think about, such as gliding under the door like air, like smoke.
I need to get back to work, Patch said.
He gave me a once-over that lingered a bit below the hips.
Killer skirt. Deadly legs.
Before I'd formed a single coherent thought, he was through the door. The older woman waiting for admittance looked at me, then over her shoulder at Patch, who was vanishing down the hall. Honey, she told me, he looks slippery as soap. Good description, I mumbled. She fluffed her short, corkscrew gray hair. A girl could lather up in soap like that. After I changed back into my clothes, I returned to the booth and slid in beside V. Elliot checked his watch and lifted his eyebrows at me. Sorry I was gone so long, I said. Did I miss anything? Nope, said V. Same old, same old. She bumped my knee and the question was implied. Well? Before I could return the bump, Elliot said,
You missed the waitress. I ordered you a red burrito.
A creepy smile tugged at the corners of his mouth. I saw my chance. Actually, I'm not sure I'm up to eating. I managed a nauseated face that wasn't altogether contrived. I think I caught what Jules has. Oh, man, V said. Are you okay? I shook my head. I'll hunt down our waitress and get her to box the food, V suggested, digging in her purse for keys.
What about me?
Said Elliot, sounding only half joking. Rain check? V said.
Bingo, I thought.
Chapter 14. I got back to the farmhouse shortly before 8. I turned my key in the lock, grabbed the doorknob, and shoved my hip against the door. I'd called my mom a few hours before dinner. She was at the office, tying up a few loose ends, not sure when she'd be home, and I expected to find the house quiet, dark, and cold. On the third shove, the door gave way, and I hurled my handbag into the darkness, then wrestled with the key still jammed in the lock. Ever since the night Patch came over, the lock had developed a greedy disposition. I wondered if Dorothea had noticed it earlier in the day. Give me the dumb key, I said, jiggling it free. The grandfather clock in the hall ticked on the hour, and 8 loud dongs reverberated through the silence. I was walking into the living room to start a fire in the wood-burning stove when there was the rustle of fabric and a low creak from across the room. I screamed. Nora!
my mom said, throwing off a blanket and scrambling into a sitting position on the sofa. What in the world's the matter? I had one hand splayed across my heart and the other flattened against the wall, supporting me. You scared me. I fell asleep. If I'd heard you come in, I would have said something. She pushed her hair off her face and blinked owlishly. What time is it? I collapsed into the nearest armchair and tried to recover my normal heart rate. My imagination had conjured up a pair of ruthless eyes behind a ski mask. Now that I was positive he wasn't a figment of my imagination, I had an overwhelming desire to tell my mom everything, from the way he jumped on the neon to his role as V's attacker. He was stalking me, and he was violent. We'd get new locks on the doors. And it seemed logical that the police would get involved. I'd feel much safer at night with an officer parked on the curb. I was going to wait to bring this up, my mom said, interrupting my thought process. But I'm not sure the perfect moment is ever going to present itself. I frowned. What's going on? She gave a long, troubled sigh. I'm thinking about putting the farmhouse up for sale. What? Why? We've been struggling for a year, and I'm not pulling in as much as I'd hoped. I've considered taking a second job, but honestly, I'm not sure there are enough hours in the day. She laughed without any trace of humor. Dorothea's wages are modest, but it's extra money we don't have. The only other thing I can think of is moving into a smaller house. Or an apartment. But this is our house. All my memories were here. The memory of my dad was here. I couldn't believe she didn't feel the same way. I would do whatever it took to stay. I'll give it 3 more months, she said, but I don't want to get your hopes up. Right then, I knew I couldn't tell my mom about the guy in the ski mask. She'd quit work tomorrow. She'd get a local job, and there'd be absolutely no choice but to sell the farmhouse. Let's talk about something brighter, Mom said, pushing her mouth into a smile. How was dinner? Fine, I said morosely. And V, how's she recovering? She can go back to school tomorrow. Mom smiled wryly. It's a good thing she broke her left arm. Otherwise, she wouldn't be able to take notes in class, and I can only imagine how disappointing that would have been for her. Ha ha, I said. I'm going to make hot chocolate. I stood and pointed over my shoulder into the kitchen. Want some? That actually sounds perfect. I'll start the fire. After a quick trip to the kitchen to round up mugs, sugar, and the cocoa canister, I came back to find that Mom had a kettle of water on the wood-burning stove. I perched myself on the arm of the sofa and handed her a mug. How did you know you were in love with Dad? I asked, striving to sound casual. There was always the chance that discussing Dad would bring on a tear fest, something I hoped to avoid. Mom settled into the sofa and propped her feet up on the coffee table. I didn't. Not until we'd been married about a year. It wasn't the answer I'd expected. Then why did you marry him? Because I thought I was in love. And when you think you're in love, you're willing to stick it out and make it work until it is love. Were you scared? To marry him? She laughed. That was the exciting part. Shopping for a gown, reserving the chapel, wearing my diamond solitaire. I pictured Patch's mischievous smile. Were you ever scared of Dad? Whenever the New England Patriots lost? Whenever the Patriots lost, my dad went to the garage and revved up his chainsaw. 2 autumns ago, he hauled the chainsaw to the woods behind our property, felled 10 trees, and diced them into firewood. We still have more than half the pile to burn through. Mom patted the sofa beside her, and I curled up against her, resting my head on her shoulder. I miss him, I said. Me too. I'm afraid I'll forget what he looked like. Not in pictures, but hanging around on a Saturday morning in sweats, making scrambled eggs. Mom laced her fingers through mine. You've always been so much like him, right from the start. Really? I sat up. In what way?
He was a good student, very clever. He wasn't flashy or outspoken, but people respected him. Was Dad ever mysterious? Mom seemed to turn this over in her mind. Mysterious people have a lot of secrets. Your father was very open. Was he ever rebellious? She gave a short, startled laugh. Did you see him that way? Harrison Gray, the world's most ethical accountant, rebellious? She gave a theatrical gasp. Heaven forbid! He did wear his hair long for a while. It was wavy and blonde, like a surfer's. Of course, his horn-rimmed glasses killed the look. So, do I dare ask what got us on this subject? I had no idea how to explain my conflicting feelings for Patch to my mom. I had no idea how to explain Patch, period. My mom was probably expecting a description that included his parents' names, his GPA, the varsity sports he played, and which colleges he planned on applying to. I didn't want to alarm her by saying I was willing to bet my piggy bank that Patch had a rap sheet. "There's this guy," I said, unable to hold back a smile at the thought of Patch. "We've been hanging out lately. Mostly school stuff." "Ooh, a boy," she said mysteriously. "Well, is he in the chess club, student council, the tennis team?" "He likes pool," I offered optimistically. "A swimmer. Is he as cute as Michael Phelps?" Of course, I always leaned toward Ryan Lochte when it came to appearances. I thought about correcting my mom. On second thought, it was probably best not to clarify. Pool, swimming, close enough, right? The phone rang and Mom stretched across the sofa to answer it. 10 seconds into the call, she flopped back against the sofa and slapped a hand to her forehead. "No, it's not a problem. I'll run over, pick it up, and bring it by first thing tomorrow morning." "Hugo?" I asked after she hung up. Hugo was my mom's boss, and to say he called all the time was putting it mildly. Once he'd called her into work on a Sunday because he couldn't figure out how to operate the copy machine. "He left some unfinished paperwork in the office and needs me to run over. I have to make copies, but I shouldn't be gone more than an hour. Have you finished your homework?" "Not yet." "Then I'll tell myself we couldn't have spent time together, even if I was here." She sighed and rose to her feet. "See you in an hour. Tell Hugo he should pay you more." She laughed. "A lot more." As soon as I had the house to myself, I cleared the breakfast dishes off the kitchen table and made room for my textbooks. English, world history, biology. Arming myself with a brand new No. 2 pencil, I flipped open the top book and went to work. 15 minutes later, my mind rebelled, refusing to digest another paragraph on European feudal systems. I wondered what Patch was doing after he got off work. Homework? Hard to believe. Eating pizza and watching basketball on TV? Maybe, but it didn't feel right. Placing bets and playing pool at Beaux Arcade? It seemed like a good guess. I had the unexplainable desire to drive to Beaux and defend my earlier behavior, but the thought was quickly put into perspective by the simple fact that I didn't have time. My mom would be home in less time than it took to make the half-hour drive there. Not to mention, Patch wasn't the kind of guy I could just go hunt down. In the past, our meetings had operated on his schedule, not mine. Always. I climbed the stairs to change into something comfy. I pushed on my bedroom door and took 3 steps inside before stopping short. My dresser drawers were yanked out, clothes strewn across the floor. The bed was ripped apart. The closet doors were open, hanging askew by their hinges. Books and picture frames littered the floor. I saw the reflection of movement in the window across the room and swung around. He stood against the wall behind me, dressed head to toe in black and wearing the ski mask. My brain was in a swirling fog, just beginning to transmit "run" to my legs when he lunged for the window, threw it open, and ducked lithely out. I took the stairs down 3 at a time. I flung myself around the banister, flew down the hall to the kitchen, and dialed 911. 15 minutes later, a patrol car bumped into the driveway. Shaking,
I unbolted the door and let the two officers in. The first officer to step inside was short and thick-waisted with salt-and-pepper hair. The other was tall and lean with hair almost as dark as Patch's, but cropped above his ears. In a strange way, he vaguely resembled Patch. Mediterranean complexion, symmetrical face, eyes with an edge. They introduced themselves. The dark-haired officer was Detective Basso. His partner was Detective Holstyak.
"Are you Nora Gray?"
Detective Holstyak asked. I nodded.
"Your parents home?"
"My mom left a few minutes before I called 911.
"So you're home alone?"
Another nod.
"Why don't you tell us what happened?"
he asked, crossing his arms and planting his feet wide, while Detective Basso walked a few paces inside the house and took a look around.
"I came home at 8 and did some homework," I said. "When I went up to my bedroom, I saw him. Everything was a mess. He tore my room apart."
"Did you recognize him?"
"He was wearing a ski mask, and the lights were off."
"Any distinguishing marks? Tattoos?"
"No."
"Height? Weight?"
I delved reluctantly into my short-term memory. I didn't want to relive the moment, but it was important that I recall any clues. "Average weight, but a little on the tall side. About the same size as Detective Basso."
"Did he say anything?"
I shook my head. Detective Basso reappeared and said,
"All clear,"
to his partner. Then he climbed to the second floor. The floorboards creaked overhead as he moved down the hall, opening and shutting doors. Detective Holstyak cracked the front door and squatted to examine the deadbolt.
"Was the door unlocked or damaged when you came home?"
"No, I used my key to get in. My mom was asleep in the living room."
Detective Basso appeared at the top of the stairs.
"Can you show us what's damaged?"
he asked me. Detective Holstyak and I climbed the stairs together, and I led the way down the hall to where Detective Basso stood just inside my bedroom door, with his hands on his hips, surveying my room. I held perfectly still, a tingle of fear creeping through me. My bed was made. My pajamas were in a heap on my pillow just the way I'd left them this morning. My dresser drawers were shut, picture frames arranged neatly on top. The trunk at the foot of the bed was closed. The floors were clean. The window drapes hung in long, smooth panels, one on either side of the closed window.
"You said you saw the intruder?"
said Detective Basso. He was staring down at me with hard eyes that didn't miss a thing, eyes that were expert at filtering lies. I stepped inside the room, but it lacked the familiar touch of comfort and safety. There was an underlying note of violation and menace. I pointed across the room at the window, trying to hold my hand steady.
"When I walked in, he jumped out the window."
Detective Basso glanced out the window.
"Long way to the ground,"
he observed. He attempted to open the window.
"Did you lock it after he left?"
"No, I ran downstairs and called 911.
"Somebody locked it."
Detective Basso was still eyeing me with razor eyes, his mouth pressed in a tight line.
"Not sure anybody'd be able to get away after a jump like that," Detective Holstyak said, joining his partner at the window. "They'd be lucky to get off with a broken leg."
"Maybe he didn't jump. Maybe he climbed down the tree," I said.
Detective Basso whipped his head around.
"Well, which is it? Did he climb or jump? He could have pushed past you and gone out the front door. That would be the logical option. That's what I'd have done. I'm going to ask once more. Think real careful. Did you really see someone in your room tonight?"
He didn't believe me. He thought I'd invented it. For a moment, I was tempted to think similarly. What was wrong with me? Why was my reality convoluted? Why did the truth never match up? For the sake of my sanity, I told myself it wasn't me. It was him. The guy in the ski mask, he was doing this. I didn't know how, but he was to blame. Detective Holstyak broke the tense silence by saying,
"When will your parents be home?"
"I live with my mom. She had to make a quick trip to the office."
"We need to ask you both a few questions," he continued.
He pointed for me to take a seat on my bed, but I shook my head numbly.
"Have you recently broken up with a boyfriend?"
"No."
"How about drugs? Have you had a problem, now or in the past?"
No.
You mentioned that you live with your mom. How about Dad? Where's he?
This was a mistake, I said. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have called. The two officers exchanged looks. Detective Holstick shut his eyes and massaged the inner corners. Detective Basso looked like he'd wasted enough time and was ready to blow it off.
We've got things to do, he said. Are you going to be all right here alone until your mom gets back?
I hardly heard him. I couldn't pull my eyes off the window. How was he doing it? 15 minutes. He'd had 15 minutes to find a way back inside and put the room in order before the police arrived. And with me downstairs the whole time. At the realization that we'd been alone in the house together, I shuddered. Detective Holstick extended his business card.
Could you have your mom call us when she gets in?
We'll see ourselves out,
Detective Basso said. He was already halfway down the hall. Chapter 15. You think Elliot murdered someone?
Shh,
I hissed at V, glancing across the rows of lab tables to make sure no one had overheard. No offense, babe, but this is starting to get ridiculous. First he attacked me, now he's a killer. I'm sorry, but Elliot? A murderer? He's like the nicest guy I've ever met. When was the last time he forgot to hold open a door for you? Oh yeah, that's right. Never. V and I were in biology, and V was lying face up on a table. We were running a lab on blood pressure, and V was supposed to be resting silently for 5 minutes. Normally I would have worked with Patch, but Coach had given us a free day, which meant we were free to choose our own partners. V and I were at the back of the room. Patch was working with a jock named Thomas Rookery at the front of the room. He was questioned as a suspect in a murder investigation, I whispered, feeling Coach's eyes gravitate toward us. I scribbled a few notes on my lab sheet. Subject is calm and relaxed. Subject has refrained from speaking for 3.5 minutes. The police obviously thought he had motive and means. Are you sure it's the same, Elliot? How many Elliot Saunderses do you think there were at Kinghorn in February? V strummed her fingers on her stomach. It just seems really, really hard to believe. And anyway, so what if he was questioned? The important thing is, he was released. They didn't find him guilty. Because police found a suicide note written by Halverson. Who's Halverson again?
Kirsten Halverson, I said impatiently. The girl who supposedly hanged herself.
Maybe she did hang herself. I mean, what if one day she said, "Hey, life sucks," and strung herself to a tree? It has happened. You don't find it a little too coincidental that her apartment showed evidence of a break-in when they discovered the suicide note? She lived in Portland. Break-ins happen. I think someone placed the note. Someone who wanted Elliot off the hook. Who would want Elliot off the hook? V asked. I gave her my best duh look. V propped herself up with her good elbow. So you're saying Elliot hauled Kirsten up a tree, tied a rope around her neck, pushed her off the limb, then did a breaking and entering job on her apartment and planted evidence pointing to a suicide. Why not? V returned the duh look. Because the cops already analyzed everything. If they're ruling it a suicide, so am I. How about this? I said. Just weeks after Elliot was released from questioning, he transferred schools. Why would someone leave Kinghorn Prep to come to CHS? You've got a point there. I think he's trying to escape his past. I think it became too uncomfortable attending school on the same campus where he killed Kirsten. He has a guilty conscience. I tapped my pencil against my lip. I need to drive out to Kinghorn and ask questions. She just died 2 months ago. Everyone will still be buzzing about it. I don't know, Nora. I'm getting bad vibes about initiating a spy operation at Kinghorn. I mean, are you going to ask about Elliot specifically? What if he finds out? What's he going to think? I looked down at her. He only has something to worry about if he's guilty. And then he'll kill you to silence you.
V grinned like the Cheshire Cat. I didn't.
I want to find out who attacked me just as much as you do, she continued on a more serious note. But I swear on my life it wasn't Elliot. I've replayed the memory like 100 times. It's not a match. Not even close. Trust me.
Okay, maybe Elliot didn't attack you, I said, trying to appease V but not about to clear Elliot's name. He still has a lot going against him. He was involved in a murder investigation for one, and he's almost too nice for two. It's creepy. And he's friends with Jules for three.
V frowned. Jules? What's wrong with Jules?
Don't you think it's odd that every time we're with them, Jules bails?
What's that supposed to mean?
The night we went to Delphic, Jules left almost immediately to use the bathroom. Did he ever come back? After I left to buy cotton candy, did Elliot find him?
No, but I chalked it up to internal plumbing issues.
Then last night, he mysteriously called in sick. I scrubbed my pencil's eraser down the length of my nose, thinking, he seems to get sick a lot.
I think you're overanalyzing this. Maybe he has IBS.
IBS?
Irritable bowel syndrome.
I discarded V's suggestion in favor of mentally stretching for an idea that floated just out of reach. Kinghorn Prep was easily an hour away by car. If the school was as academically rigorous as Elliot claimed, how did Jules continually have time to make the drive to Coldwater to visit? I saw him nearly every morning on my way to Enzo's Bistro with Elliot. Plus, he gave Elliot a ride home after school. It was almost like Elliot had Jules in the palm of his hand. But that wasn't all of it. I scrubbed the eraser more furiously against my nose. What was I missing? Why would Elliot kill Kirsten? I wondered out loud. Maybe she saw him do something illegal, and he killed her to silence her. V let go of a sigh. This is starting to drift into the land of this makes absolutely no sense. There's something else. Something we're not seeing. V looked at me like my logic was vacationing in outer space. Personally, I think you're seeing too much. This feels a lot like a witch hunt. And then all of a sudden, I knew what I was missing. It had been nagging me all day, calling to me from the back of my mind, but I'd been too overwhelmed with everything else to pay attention. Detective Basso had asked me if anything was missing. It just now hit me that something was. I'd set the article about Elliot on top of my dresser last night, but this morning, I consulted my memory to be sure, it was gone. Definitely gone. Oh my gosh, I said. Elliot broke into my house last night. It was him. He stole the article. Since the article was in plain sight, it was obvious Elliot had torn apart my room to terrorize me, possibly as punishment for finding the article in the first place.
Whoa, what? V said.
What's wrong?
Asked Coach, coming to a stop beside me.
Yeah, what's wrong?
V chimed in. She pointed and laughed at me from behind Coach's back.
The subject doesn't appear to have a pulse, I said, giving V's wrist a hard pinch.
While Coach probed for V's pulse, she made swooning motions and fanned herself. Coach flicked his eyes to mine, looking at me over the top of his glasses.
Right here, Nora, beating loud and strong. Are you sure the subject refrained from activity, including talking, for the full 5 minutes? This pulse isn't as slow as I would have expected.
The subject struggled with the no-talking step, V interjected. And the subject has a hard time relaxing on a rock-hard biology table. The subject would like to propose switching places, so Nora can be the new subject.
V used her right hand to grab me and pull herself upright.
Don't make me regret allowing you to choose your own partners,
Coach told us.
Don't make me regret coming to school today, said V sweetly.
Coach shot her a warning look, then picked up my lab sheet, eyes skimming the all but blank page.
The subject equates biology labs with overdosing on prescription-strength sedatives, V said.
Coach chirped his whistle, and all eyes in the class swung our way.
Patch,
he said.
Mind taking over here? We seem to have run into a partner problem.
I was so kidding, V said quickly. Here, I'll do the lab.
You should have thought of that 15 minutes ago, Coach said.
Please forgive me, she asked, batting her eyelashes angelically. Coach tucked her notebook under her good arm.
No.
Sorry, V mouthed over her shoulder at me as she walked reluctantly to the front of the room. A moment later, Patch took a seat on the table beside me. He clasped his hands loosely between his knees and kept a steady gaze on me. What? I said, feeling unnerved by the weight of his stare. He smiled.
I was remembering the shark shoes last night.
I got the usual Patch-induced flutter in my stomach, and like usual, I couldn't distinguish if it was a good thing or a bad thing. How was your night? I asked, my voice carefully neutral as I attempted to break the ice. My spying adventures still hung uncomfortably between us.
Interesting. Yours?
Not so much.
Homework was brutal, huh?
He was making fun of me. I didn't do homework. He had the smile of a fox.
Who did you do?
I was speechless a moment. I stood there with my mouth slightly open. Was that an innuendo?
Just curious what my competition is.
Grow up. His smile stretched.
Loosen up.
I'm already walking on thin ice with Coach, so do me a favor and let's concentrate on the lab. I'm not in the mood to play test subjects, so if you don't mind. I looked pointedly at the table.
Can't, he said. I don't have a heart.
I told myself he wasn't being literal. I lowered myself down on the table and stacked my hands on my stomach. Tell me when 5 minutes are up. I shut my eyes, preferring not to watch Patch's black eyes examine me. A few minutes later, I opened one eye a slit.
Time's up, said Patch.
I held one upturned wrist out so he could take my pulse. Patch took my hand, and a jolt of heat shot up my arm and ended with a squeeze in my stomach.
The subject's pulse increased on contact, he said.
Don't write that. It was supposed to sound indignant. If anything, it sounded like I was repressing a smile.
Coach wants us to be thorough.
What do you want? I asked him. Patch's eyes connected with mine. On the inside, he was grinning. I could tell. Except, you know, that. After school, I swung by Miss Green's office for our scheduled appointment. At the end of the school day, Dr. Hendrickson had always kept his door wide open, a nonverbal invitation for students to stop by. Every time I passed down this stretch of hallway now, Miss Green had the door closed. All the way. The do not disturb was implicit. Nora, she said, opening the door after my knock. Please, come in. Have a seat. Her office was fully unpacked and decorated today. She'd brought in several more plants, and a panel of framed botanical prints hung in a row on the wall above her desk. Miss Green said, I've been thinking a lot about what you said last week. I came to the obvious conclusion that our relationship needs to be built on trust and respect. We won't discuss your dad again unless you specify.
Okay, I said warily. What were we going to talk about?
I heard some rather disappointing news, she said. Her smile faded and she leaned forward, resting her elbows on the desk. She was holding a pen and she rolled it between her palms. I don't mean to pry into your private life, Nora, but I thought I made myself perfectly clear concerning your involvement with Patch. I wasn't quite sure where she was going with this. I haven't tutored him. And really, was it any of her business? Saturday night, Patch gave you a ride home from Delphic Seaport, and you invited him inside your house. I fought to hold in a choke of protest. How do you know about that? Part of my job as your school psychologist is to give you guidance, Miss Green said. Please promise me you'll be very, very careful around Patch. She looked at me like she was actually waiting for my oath of promise. It's kind of complicated, I said. My ride left me stranded at Delphic. I didn't have a choice. It's not like I seek out opportunities to spend time with Patch. Well, except for last night at the borderline. In my defense, I honestly hadn't expected to see Patch. He was supposed to have the night off.
I'm very glad to hear it, Miss Green answered,
but she didn't sound fully convinced of my innocence.
With that out of the way, is there anything else you'd like to talk about today? Anything weighing on your mind?
I wasn't about to tell her that Elliot broke into my house. I didn't trust Miss Green. I couldn't put my finger on it, but something about her bothered me. And I didn't like the way she kept hinting that Patch was dangerous, but wouldn't tell me why. It was almost like she had an agenda. I hoisted my backpack off the ground and opened the door.
No,
I said.
Chapter 16.
V was leaning against my locker, doodling on her cast with a purple marker.
Hi,
she said when there was nothing of the hallway left between us.
Where have you been?
I checked the e-zine lab and the library. I had a meeting with Miss Green, the new school psych. I said it very matter-of-factly, but on the inside I had a hollow, trembly feeling. I couldn't stop thinking about Elliot breaking into my house. What was stopping him from doing it again? Or from doing something worse?
What happened?
V asked. I spun my locker combination and traded out books. Do you know how much a good alarm system costs?
No offense, babe, but nobody's going to steal your car.
I pinned V with a black look. For my house. I want to make sure Elliot can't get inside again. V glanced around and cleared her throat.
What?
I said. V did a hands up.
Nothing. Nothing at all. If you're still bent on nailing this to Elliot, that's your prerogative. It's a crazy prerogative, but, hey, it's yours.
I shoved my locker door closed, and the rattle echoed down the hall. I bit back an accusatory response that she, of all people, should believe me, and instead said, "I'm on my way to the library, and I'm in sort of a hurry." We exited the building and crossed the grounds to the parking lot, and I came up short. I looked around for the Fiat, but that's when I remembered that my mom had dropped me off on her way to work this morning, and with V's arm broken, she wasn't driving.
Crap, V said, reading my thoughts. We're carless.
Shielding my eyes from the sun, I squinted down the street. Guess this means we'll have to walk.
Not we. You. I'd come with, but once a week is my library limit.
You haven't been to the library this week, I pointed out.
Yeah, but I might have to go tomorrow.
Tomorrow's Thursday. In all your life, have you ever studied on a Thursday? V tapped a fingernail to her lip and adopted a thoughtful expression.
Have I ever studied on a Wednesday?
Not that I recall.
There you have it. I can't go. It would be anti-tradition.
30 minutes later, I hiked up the steps leading to the library's main doors. Once inside, I put homework on the back burner and went directly to the media lab, where I combed the internet trying to find more information on the Kinghorn hanging. I didn't find much. Originally, there had been a lot of hype, but after the suicide note was discovered and Elliot was released, the news moved on. It was time to take a trip to Portland. I wasn't going to learn much more sifting through archived news articles, but maybe I'd have better luck doing legwork there. I logged off and called my mom.
Do I need to be home by 9 tonight?
Yes, why? I was thinking of taking a bus out to Portland. She gave me one of her you-must-think-I'm-crazy laughs. I need to interview some students at Kinghorn Prep, I said. It's for a project I've been researching. It wasn't a lie. Not really. Of course, it would have been much easier to justify if I weren't burdened by the guilt of keeping the break-in and ensuing police visit from her. I'd thought about telling her, but every time I opened my mouth to say the words, they slipped away. We were struggling to survive. We needed my mom's income. If I told her about Elliot, she'd quit immediately.
You can't go to the city alone. It's a school night and it will be dark soon. Besides, by the time you get there, the students will have left.
I heaved a sigh.
Okay, I'll be home soon.
I know I promised you a ride, but I'm stuck at my office. I heard her shuffling papers in the background, and I imagined she had the phone cradled under her chin and the phone cord wrapped around her body several times.
Is it too much to ask you to walk?
The weather was just this side of cool. I had my jean jacket, and I had two legs, I could walk. The plan sounded a lot more reasonable in my head, because the thought of walking home left my insides hollow. But aside from spending the night in the library, I didn't see any other choice. I was almost through the library doors when I heard my name called. Turning around, I found Marcy Miller closing the distance between us.
"I heard about V," she said. "It's really sad. I mean, who would attack her? Unless, you know, they couldn't help it. Maybe it was self-defense. I heard it was dark and raining. It would be easy to mistake V for a moose, or a bear, or a buffalo. Really, any hulking animal would do."
"Gosh, it was nice talking to you, but I've got a lot of things I'd rather be doing. Like sticking my hand in the garbage disposal." I continued toward the exit.
"I hope she stayed clear of those hospital meals," Marcy said, keeping at my heels. "I hear they're high in fat. She can't stand to gain a lot of weight."
I spun around. "That's it. One more word and I'll..." We both knew it was an empty threat. Marcy simpered.
"You'll what?"
"Skank," I said.
"Geek."
"Slut."
"Freak."
"Anorexic pig."
"Wow,"
said Marcy, staggering back melodramatically with a hand pressed to her heart.
"Am I supposed to act offended? Try this on for size. Old news. At least I know how to exercise a little self-control."
The security guard standing at the doors cleared his throat.
"All right, break it up. Take this outside or I'm going to cart the both of you inside my office and start calling parents."
"Talk to her," Marcy said, pointing a finger at me. "I'm the one who's trying to be nice. She verbally attacked me. I was just offering my condolences to her friend."
I said, "Outside."
"You look good in uniform,"
Marcy told him, flashing her trademark toxic smile. He jerked his head at the doors.
"Get out of here."
But it didn't sound half so gruff. Marcy sashayed up to the doors.
"Mind getting the door for me? I'm short on hands."
She was holding one book, a paperback. The guard pushed on the handicap button and the doors automatically glided open.
"Why, thank you,"
Marcy said, blowing him a kiss. I didn't follow her. I wasn't sure what would happen if I did, but I was filled with enough negative emotion that I just might do something I'd regret. Name-calling and fighting were beneath me, unless I was dealing with Marcy Miller. I turned around and headed back into the library. At the elevators, I stepped into the metal cage and punched the button for the basement level. I could have waited around a few minutes for Marcy to leave, but I knew another way out and decided to take it. 5 years ago, the city had approved moving the public library into a historic building smack in the center of Old Town Coldwater. The red brick dated back to the 1850s, and the building was complete with a romantic cupola and a widow's walk to watch for vessels coming in from sea. Unfortunately, the building didn't include a parking lot, so an underground tunnel had been dug to connect the library to the underground parking garage of the courthouse across the street. The garage now served both buildings. The elevator clanked to a stop and I stepped off. The tunnel was lit with fluorescent lights that flickered pale purple. It took me a moment to force my feet to walk. I was struck by the sudden thought of my dad the night he was killed. I wondered if he'd been on a street as remote and dark as the tunnel ahead.
"Pull it together," I told myself. "It was a random act of violence. You've spent the last year paranoid about every dark alley, dark room, dark closet. You can't live the rest of your life terrified of having a gun pulled on you."
Determined to prove my fear was all in my head, I headed down the tunnel, hearing the soft tap of my shoes on the concrete. Shifting my backpack to my left shoulder, I calculated how long it would take to walk home, and whether or not I was up for taking a shortcut across the railroad tracks now that it was dusk. I hoped that if I kept my thoughts upbeat and busy, I wouldn't have time to concentrate on my growing sense of alarm. The tunnel ended, and a dark form stood straight ahead. I stopped mid-stride, and my heart dropped a few beats. Patch was wearing a black t-shirt, loose jeans, steel-toed boots. His eyes looked like they didn't play by the rules. His smile was a little too cunning for comfort. "What are you doing here?" I asked, pushing a handful of hair off my face and glancing past him to the car exit leading above ground. I knew it was straight ahead, but several of the overhead fluorescent lights were out of service, making it difficult to see clearly. If rape, murder, or any other miscreant activities were on Patch's mind, he'd cornered me in the perfect place. As Patch moved toward me, I backed up. I came up short against a car and saw my chance. I scrambled around it, positioning myself opposite Patch, with the car between us. Patch looked at me over the top of the car. His eyebrows lifted. "I have questions," I said. "A lot of them."
"About?"
"About everything." His mouth twitched, and I was pretty sure he was fighting a smile.
"And if my answers don't make the cut, you're going to make a break for it?"
He gave a nod in the direction of the garage's exit. That was the plan, more or less. Give or take a few glaring holes, like the fact that Patch was a lot faster than me.
"Let's hear those questions," he said.
"How did you know I'd be at the library tonight?"
"Seemed like a good guess."
I didn't for one moment believe Patch was here on a hunch. There was a side to him that was almost predatory. If the armed forces knew about him, they'd do everything in their power to recruit him. Patch lunged to his left. I countered his move, scurrying toward the rear of the car. When Patch came up short, I did too. He was at the nose of the car, and I was at the tail. "Where were you Sunday afternoon?" I asked. "Did you follow me when I went shopping with V?" Patch may not have been the guy in the ski mask, but that didn't mean he hadn't been involved in the chain of recent disturbing events. He was keeping something from me. He'd been keeping something from me since the day we met. Was it a coincidence that the last normal day in my life had been right before that fateful day? I didn't think so.
"No. How'd that go, by the way? Buy anything?"
"Maybe," I said, thrown off guard.
"Like?"
I thought back. V and I had only made it as far as Victoria's Secret. I'd spent $30 on the lacy black bra, but I wasn't about to go there. Instead, I related my evening, starting with sensing I was being followed, and ending with finding V on the side of the road, the victim of a brutal mugging. "Well," I demanded when I finished, "do you have anything to say?"
"No."
"You have no idea what happened to V?"
"Again, no."
"I don't believe you."
"That's because you have trust issues."
He splayed both hands on the car, leaning across the hood.
"We've been over this."
I felt my temper spark. Patch had flipped the conversation again. Instead of shining on him, the spotlight was directed back on me. I especially didn't like being reminded that he knew all sorts of things about me. Private things, like my trust issues. Patch lunged clockwise. I ran away from him, halting when he did. While we were at a standstill again, his eyes locked on mine, almost as if he was trying to glean my next move from them. "What happened on the Archangel? Did you save me?" I asked.
"If I'd saved you, we wouldn't be standing here having this conversation."
"You mean if you hadn't saved me, we wouldn't be here? I'd be dead."
"That's not what I said."
I had no idea what he meant. "Why wouldn't we be standing here?"
"You'd still be here."
He paused.
"I probably wouldn't."
Before I could figure out what he was talking about, he darted for me again, this time attacking from the right. Momentarily confused, I gave up some of the distance between us. Instead of stopping, Patch skirted around the car. I made a break for it, running down the straightaway of the garage. I made it three cars before he caught hold of my arm. He spun me around and backed me against a cement beam.
"So much for that plan," he said.
I glared at him. There was a lot of panic behind it, though. He flashed a grin brimming with dark intent, confirming that I had every reason to sweat freely. "What's going on?" I said, working hard to sound hostile. "How come I swear I can hear your voice in my head? And why did you say you came to school for me?"
"I was tired of admiring your legs from a distance."
"I want the truth." I swallowed hard. "I deserve full disclosure."
"Full disclosure,"
he repeated with a sly grin.
"Does this have anything to do with the promise you made to expose me? What exactly are we talking about here?"
I couldn't remember what we were talking about. All I knew was that Patch's gaze felt especially hot. I had to break eye contact, so I trained my eyes on my hands. They were glistening with sweat, and I slid them behind my back. "I have to go," I said. "I have homework."
"What happened in there?"
He tilted his chin back at the elevators. "Nothing." Before I could stop him, He had my palm pressed to his, forming a steeple with our hands. He slid his fingers between mine, locking me to him.
"Your knuckles are white,"
he said, brushing his mouth across.